Welcome.
Hello once again, everybody, and thank you for joining me here on this Wednesday, February 28th edition of Bang the Book Radio. My name is Adam Burke, your host for the next hour and a half, if we're lucky. Talk about all things in the world of sports from a betting focus. Glad to have you with me for this midweek edition of the show. Two very, very smart people joining me here today. Lots of college basketball coming your way. The first, Wes Reynolds, you know from Twitter, at Wes Reynolds, and the number one for our Wednesday wagering segment. We'll chat some general conference tournament betting tips, talk a little bit about the Big Ten conference tournament, then break up the college basketball a little bit here with a look at the WGC Mexico Championship, a big-time PGA Tour / European Tour event coming up here this weekend. Then we'll welcome Kyle Hunter of huntersportspicks.com back onto the show. We've got nine conference tournaments that we're going to run through here for you on today's show. They are the America East, Colonial, Horizon, MAAC, Missouri Valley, Ohio Valley, SoCon Summit, and West Coast Conference. All those conference tournaments starting tomorrow or later in the week here. So we'll bring you a lot of great information on those. Speaking of great information, over at bangthebook.com, I posted my AL West season win total previews last night for Houston, the LA Angels, Oakland, Seattle, and Texas. Three of my top bets in the American League coming from that division. So make sure you check that out over there at bangthebook.com. The entire American League now posted over there. This morning, I also posted NASCAR Monster Energy Cup Series and Xfinity Series previews. I'll have UFC going up tomorrow. We've got everything over there at bangthebook.com. My conference tournament previews, NBA, NHL, additional college basketball, obviously MLB as well. We are your one-stop shop for sports betting news and information. Don't forget about our free pick contest where you can win cash prizes. You just sign up with an email address, get involved in those. Our sportsbook reviews, you know about that promo code over at DSI Sportsbook, BTB, and the number 25, $25 free bet just for signing up, 100% deposit match bonus for both the sportsbook and the live casino. So plenty of things for you to check out over there at the website, our matchup data section. You can listen to archived shows and segments here at Bang the Book Radio. Just tons of stuff at your disposal. Make sure you use that to your advantage here this time of year with what is a very, very busy sports calendar. Two guests coming your way here on the show today. The first, the great Wes Reynolds, at Wes Reynolds, the number one on Twitter. Wes, how's it going today, sir?
Hey, Adam, doing well, man. How about yourself?
I'm doing very well. Appreciate your time here, as always, on the program. And I know that, Wes, a lot of people have been talking about this here this week, and I certainly agree with their sentiment. These next 6 weeks with conference tournaments, the NFL draft is going to be the tail end of that, March Madness, the NBA playoff push, the NHL playoff push, NHL trade deadline, the start of Major League Baseball. It's a crazy time of year, but you and I wouldn't have it any other way.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, we were actually talking just for a couple minutes before we came on air here and, talking about MLB season wins, and I haven't done a ton of work with that yet because, there are teams still signing guys. You know, there are still moves being made, so I haven't done as much work at this point. I got to try to kind of find a way to squeeze it in a little bit with all the conference tournaments going on and then, you know, the day-to-day and weekly normal betting schedule. So, there really is a lot going on at this time. You know, I think once we get into the playoffs with NHL and NBA, it really kind of calms down a little bit, and I'll be looking forward to that.
Yeah, I know I will be too. I'll certainly be looking forward to April and the start of the Major League Baseball season and being able to dive in with that on a game-by-game, day-by-day basis. And, you know, I love college basketball, but, you know, it's kind of like college football where it was bittersweet for college football to end because I certainly love college football and the bowl games are always exciting. But you kind of get some burnout by the time it's all said and done. And college basketball, right now it's all excitement. But, you know, once we get to the tail end of March Madness, you're going to be looking back at it saying, you know what? I'm kind of glad that this is over now for a few months.
Yeah, I totally agree. And I mean, the one good thing too about, you know, when you get also into like the NBA and NHL playoffs, I mean, you're not going to have more than four games in a day, if that. And a lot of times it's going to be maybe two or three. So it's not like, you know, having a full card like you would have, like you had maybe last night in the NHL where you had 10 or, you know, or if you have 10 or so games, or in the NBA where you've got, you know, 26 of the 32 teams or whatever, or 30 teams playing. So, you know, that makes it a little bit more manageable.
All right, well, let's talk about some of these conference tournaments here. I know that you love to do a lot of college basketball stuff because you're very big into derivative betting. And, you know, these conference tournaments are very unique because you've got teams playing on back-to-back days. And the only other time that we see this in college basketball is very early in the year with those non-conference tournaments that teams like to play. So I imagine that's kind of an important point for you here in terms of looking, you know, at the conference tournament market, maybe from a derivative standpoint or from a full game standpoint with all these back-to-backs now.
Yeah, one of the situations I actually really like, and it would seem to go against wisdom, you know, because a lot of people say, oh, play the rested team. But in these conference tournaments, I kind of like to bet the team that had to play the night before or the day before, especially in the first half. Because I think, the kind of the general philosophy or the guideline of that is that, you have a team that's already in tournament mode. You have a team that's already played a game, you know, against a team that's going to have to bye. Because you're going to have in some of these conference tournaments, you're going to have teams that get byes to the quarterfinals or double byes. And I think the team that's already played, especially if it's on a neutral site, you know, whether it's Madison Square Garden or the Sprint Center in Kansas City or wherever these various tournaments are at neutral sites or the Pac-12 in Vegas at the T-Mobile. I think that provides the team that's played an edge, especially early, because they've had a full game. They know maybe the sight lines in terms of the arena, and they've been through that before, and it's a lot different doing that in a game than it is maybe doing in a walkthrough or a shoot-around.
Yeah, I think that makes a lot of sense. And, you know, as long as you don't have a situation where maybe a team had to go to double overtime or something like that and play a really challenging game, because one of the things that you do want to pay attention to here in the conference tournaments, and I think this is something that's come up relatively often in the Missouri Valley Conference. Now, obviously, Wichita State is a huge favorite year after year after year. But there's a situation in the Missouri Valley where I think it's the semifinal game to the championship game. The championship game is a 1 o'clock local time tip off on Sunday. So the team that has to play the late game in the second semifinal isn't done until about 7 or 7:30 local time. That's a very, very quick turnaround. Sometimes teams do get some advantages by playing earlier in the day or, you know, playing late in the day to where they get some extra rest. So those are also situations that you want to look at. And, you know, again, those are unique to these conference tournaments because you don't get the back-to-backs in the regular season.
Yeah, and you're also, I think, going to see that, I know for sure, in the Big Ten. Friday night, you're going to have, should Indiana get by their first game on Thursday, they're the sixth seed in the Big Ten tournament, and they play Purdue on Friday night. Well, that's at about like 9:15 or 9:30 on a Friday night, and then you got to play the semifinal kind of in the mid to late afternoon. I don't know if they've moved the time back, but I think it's probably at least around 4 o'clock in the afternoon on Saturday. So, you know, that is a bit of a quick turnaround, I think, in those games. And I mean, maybe sometimes in a quick turnaround like that, you could look to the under because a coach is going to more often than not emphasize defense. And it takes more effort to play defense than it takes offense to play offense. So, I mean, you get little spots like that that you're always going to have.
And I think the conference tournament's set up really, really well for somebody like you. And, you know, we've been talking about this a lot, I think, during the college basketball season that, you know, for me, I mean, I don't do a whole lot of full game wagering anymore just because I don't think that there are as many edges to be had. I think with the, you know, ease of access now to live betting and derivative betting to play first and second halves, and, you know, I mean, people are like buying private islands playing Golden State third quarters this year in the NBA. You know, it's just one of those things where if you start to pick up on some of these trends, you can have a lot of success with them. And I think conference tournaments set up really well in that regard because I think the individual halves of a game are very high variance at this time of year because, you know, as you mentioned, if you've got a team that played the night before, they're in that mode, they're in that rhythm, they've played in that arena, they've gotten rid of some of those nerves, you know, because, I mean, a lot of these teams fighting for their NCAA tournament lives here at this time of the year. So shaking off some of that rust, getting some of that out of your system in the first game can be really helpful for you in the first half of the next game, but at the same time, you're playing a better team. And over X number of possessions, the better team has an edge every time up and down the floor. So you can see some first halves where a team really hangs around and some second halves where they just get blown away.
Yeah, and I think that applies to different scenarios when you're looking kind of at the regular season stuff. I mean, you know, we always hear that it's kind of tough to beat a team three times in a season. In fact, it's really difficult. And, I mean, there were just a couple little games tonight in some of these small conferences, Northeastern Conference to be in particular. You've got a couple scenarios where you've got teams that have been beaten twice, and, of course, they're the underdog in the third game. Well, that's sometimes a team maybe you want to look at a little bit in the first half, you know, to kind of see, okay, they've beaten us twice, so they're going to be a little bit more motivated than the team that, you know, hey, we've already beaten these guys twice. So that's where I think there might be some opportunities, is to maybe bet that team that's lost twice in the first half, because you know that they're going to have at least a slightly better motivational edge.
Yeah, and I also think, too, that, you know, one of the things that you have to consider in this tournament is, or in these tournaments, is that, again, because you have this back-to-back factor, if a team does jump out of the gate big in the first half and they know that they have to play the next day, that can kind of dictate what they do in the second half. And, you know, a lot of times, I mean, maybe you don't necessarily want to play this from a spread standpoint, because a team that is getting crushed may just kind of pack it in and sort of put it away. But I think from a total standpoint, you can do a lot of things with second halves in these conference tournaments.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you know, you're going to see some of these where, I mean, you might have a margin in terms of a point margin in the first half where there's been a lot of points. And then in the second half, it really slows down. I mean, you know, I've noticed in a couple of these tournaments, especially like the Big Ten tournament, which is kind of seen as this, you know, plotting, slower style, you get a little bit of value in the first half overs because the totals are so low and people are, you know, see these teams like Wisconsin and whatnot that don't score high point totals and, you know, immediately think under in the first half, but it, you know, these in recent years have been going over actually. So, I mean, you could get a little bit of value that, and then you can always come back with the second half under and think that it's going to play more true to what you thought it would play in terms of the pregame total for the full game, you know, and you could kind of find and play that way through the second half totals.
And one other point I want to make here in general about conference tournaments, then we'll take a look at the Big Ten conference tournament and maybe illustrate some of these points, is that, you know, I think the odds makers have a really hard time with these conference tournaments as well, because you have that back-to-back factor and you know, you have to try to ascertain, you know, how much is that worth? I mean, if you've got a team that played eight guys for, you know, 15 plus minutes apiece, that's a little bit different than a team that played, you know, all five starters, 33, 34 plus minutes. You know, that's a very interesting situation and something that you want to look for as you're doing your box score study is, you know, if you've got a team in a back-to-back, how deep are they? And for the odds makers, you know, maybe they have to kind of account for that, or maybe they just let the market figure it out, and that could give us some edges. But then also, you know, tournaments like this where you've got everybody paying attention, everybody watching all these games, you've got all the bubble talk, there can be so much recency bias in these numbers.
Yeah, absolutely. I think, you know, you look at a team, and when you were talking about teams that maybe don't play a lot of guys or teams that play guys, you know, kind of a variety of minutes, you know, they go maybe 10 deep or whatnot. I was kind of thinking about Nevada a little bit because they kind of stood out to me because here you have a team that's won the Mountain West regular season. I'm sure they're going to be motivated to win the conference tournament, but they're more than likely already in as an at-large, no matter what they do in the conference tournament in Vegas next week. And you look at Nevada kind of this late in the season, now they're down to about seven scholarship players and don't have a true point guard with the Lindsey Drew injury. So, you know, you wonder if a team kind of wears down a little bit late when, they don't have very many bodies, and they're having to play these guys, you know, a lot more minutes than they would like to with only 7 scholarship players. And, you know, you just kind of wonder about a team like that. And there's various teams that have those kind of situations. I mean, you have some teams that play like the more pressing style, like Auburn, that's probably going to play 9-10 guys. And then you have some teams that are only going to maybe play 6 or 7. So that's something very important to look at in terms of the minutes and whatnot. And, you know, who's kind of wearing down toward the end of the season.
Yeah, and you can also take a look at pace things. As you mentioned, teams that press, you know, what about a team like West Virginia? How can they fare playing quick back-to-backs? You know, Texas, obviously a team that plays a very aggressive defense with Shaka Smart. You know, VCU isn't as aggressive as they used to be, but then you can also look at some teams that played a very high tempo offensively. You know, if they're playing a third game in 3 days, how much do they have in the tank? How much is there for them? One other team I would mention, and this one from the Big 12 about, you know, the injury situation, is Texas Tech. I mean, for Texas Tech, you know, they're probably dropping themselves down to about a 3 seed at this point with how things have gone of late. Maybe they'll be the weakest 2 that's out there in the field. We'll have to see, you know, what happens from a bracket standpoint. But what is their incentive to force Keenan Evans to play 3 games in 3 days here in the Big 12 tournament? I mean, that's a guy that you absolutely have to have healthy. They've not played well with him hurt. In fact, they've looked quite bad. You got some teams like in Nevada that you mentioned that, you know, they're already in the field, and the conference tournament, you know, it's icing on the cake or the cherry on top or whatever you want to say, but their focus is being ready for when, you know, March Madness actually starts here coming up on, you know, if you've got a play-in game on the 13th or the 14th, but certainly on the 15th or 16th for everybody else, you know, you've got larger goals in mind to where you're not going to compromise those with the conference tournament.
Yeah, and I mean, this is also where you go, and I will speak to this for previous experience as an IU, Indiana basketball fan and alum of the school. One of the kind of the knocks on Tom Crean, I'll just use this as an example, is that he kind of beat his guys into the ground a little bit. I mean, you know, they're having these hard practices. I mean, and you don't need to have these really long, hard practices in February and in March. And that catches up to you in March. And a lot of times you saw that teams would peak early at Indiana and they would be a little bit out of gas. I mean, once they reach March. And I think people remember when they were the number one seed in in 2012, when they were the number one seed and they kind of, you know, got through their first round game, then they kind of had a tougher game than expected against Temple, who was in the 8-9 seed. And then they go play Syracuse in the Sweet 16, which you think, okay, they got some kids that can shoot the ball, so they should be able to beat Syracuse. They've run in the same 2-3 zone for 30 years, and they couldn't do anything. And, I mean, I think a lot of that was them kind of being beat down a little bit. So this is where, you know, you really got to manage your minutes and manage your practice time. I mean, your practices right now, quite honestly, if you're doing any type of physicality or any type of real running in your practices other than maybe doing walkthroughs and such, I mean, they should be mostly walkthroughs or just game-specific planning instead of, you know, doing a lot of full court drills and stuff like that. I mean, you shouldn't be having 2-plus-hour practices. You should be having like 30 to 45-minute practices at this point.
All right, well, let's talk about the Big Ten Conference Tournament here then. And this thing does start today. Actually, the first game coming up here at 5:30, Illinois and Iowa. A pick 'em pretty much market-wide. Five Dimes got Illinois a slight favorite in that one. And then another game coming up tonight, that's Minnesota and Rutgers. None of those four teams really have a chance to win this conference tournament. And keep in mind, too, that a lot of sports books, I know Five Dimes definitely does this, they'll adjust the futures odds as we go round by round here. So if you do miss something or maybe you pick up on something over the course of the tournament, you will have the opportunity to go out there and play it. Michigan State, the favorite right now, they're plus 153 in these numbers coming from Five Dimes. Purdue plus 158, the second favorite, even though they're the 3 seed. Michigan, the third favorite, plus 600 as a 5 seed. So because they didn't get the double bye into the quarterfinals, they have to play an extra game on Thursday. They won this conference tournament last year with that similar setup, so it wasn't really a worry for them. Ohio State plus 825, Nebraska plus 2100, and then on down from there. You got Penn State at 24, Maryland at 34, Indiana at 60. So overall here, you know, this conference tournament at Madison Square Garden for the first time, what are you looking for out of the Big Ten?
Yeah, I mean, and I'm not particularly a fan of the Big Ten having their tournament this week and having it in New York City, but that's beside the point. You know, I think when you have a conference that has 12 to 14 teams, you know, 15 teams in the case of the ACC, you know, you can bet more than one maybe future. I'm not saying bet four or five teams, but, you know, you can maybe bet two futures in some of these tournaments, maybe somebody that you think has a realistic chance to win, and then somebody that's a long shot that if they can get kind of a break their way, you know, could potentially break through. And, you know, and it also gives you an opportunity to have a bigger price as you get maybe into the semifinals or the finals, and then that could probably give you a little bit of a hedging opportunity if you so want to do that, where you've got a big plus price on a future, but you just go ahead and take the favorite money line and then work the math in terms of, you know, how much you bet on whatnot, and then just kind of play with the numbers as you go. But, you know, looking at this Big Ten tournament, I mean, I think Michigan's getting some love because they're kind of the hot team, and they're probably playing as good a basketball as anyone in the conference. I mean, I wish they were a little bit better than 6-1 as a 5 seed. I mean, I think if they were around close to 10-1, they would be a for sure take, because they're pretty good in this situation, as you mentioned. They are in that top draw with Michigan State, who I think, you know, was the best team in the conference and ended up emerging as so. But they've beaten Michigan State, so I don't think that they're going to be scared to play them. I mean, I think you look at Ohio State, too, you know, at about 8-1, that's kind of disrespectful. I mean, well, Ohio State, I think, did exceed expectations this year. And I think that there's perhaps a reason why they're kind of that low for a 2 seed in a major conference tournament, because they're the 2 seed, but they might get a 7 seed who's beaten them twice already with Penn State. And then let's say that they win that scenario where, you know, it's hard to beat a team 3 times. Then they're looking at playing potentially Purdue in a revenge spot where they beat Purdue at home. Or they're looking at playing Indiana, who they swept, but they had the ball last in the season finale and, you know, hit a long 3 at the buzzer in overtime to beat Indiana, and that was a game that really could have went either way. So you got an Indiana team that's probably going to want to get them back in a payback situation, having lost to them twice. So, I mean, I kind of think Ohio State got a tough draw here, and I think that's why that they're priced the way they are. Purdue, I think, is the team that's a little bit under the radar, but I just don't think you're really getting very good odds here with the price. I mean, I think if Purdue was like 4-1, yeah, I'd say definitely play Purdue. But, you know, at you know, 2-1 or less, I don't think that's a play. From a longer shot perspective, I don't think the bottom four, either of them, really have a chance. If I was looking at maybe something with a little bit of value for a long shot, I think maybe Indiana, you mentioned 5 times. I mean, they're 60-1 there. And then you look at Wisconsin, who I think kind of played better down the stretch, even though they've been a little beat up with injuries. You know, if you like the way a team looks and the way a team plays down the stretch, you know, they're 100-1 shot. So those are kind of the two teams, I think, that are the longer shots that you may want to look at or maybe take a flyer on. But Michigan, I definitely think, is the team that's playing best going into the tournament. I think Purdue is going to probably – I would pick, if gun to my head, I would pick Purdue to win the tournament, because I think maybe they have righted the ship a little bit, but at the current price, I couldn't.
The team that's most interesting to me here, and this is a team that, you know, it doesn't have a great draw because they're going to run into Michigan State if they do wind up making their way to the semifinals. But Nebraska is a team here. You got them at plus 2,100. They get the double bye to the quarterfinals. So, again, that could be a detriment in that 2:30 tip-off on Friday when they play a Michigan team that has already played a game. But for Nebraska here, I mean, it's basically win the conference tournament or bust for them, or at the very least, get to the final. Because this is a team that right now seems to be very firmly on the bubble. We know Michigan State, Ohio State, Purdue, and Michigan are all in. So for Nebraska here, if you want to look at teams that are motivated and have the most to lose, the Cornhuskers are that team. Now, I don't know what that means in the conference tournament context, because as you talked about, you know, with a team like Nevada, even somebody that's in should still be motivated to get that banner and get that hardware. But, man, for Nebraska, I mean, if anybody has to go out there and lay it all out on the line, especially in that 4-5 game on Friday, it is the Cornhuskers. And I think that makes them kind of an interesting play, even though, you know, they're not better than the top three seeds or Michigan.
Yeah, and I take Nebraska. I think that probably that 4-5 game on Friday is a must-win for them. Now, I think if they win that game, they may find themselves on the right side of the bubble, because the one thing, it could be an advantage or a disadvantage, because it's almost like, because the Big Ten is not playing next week and all these major conferences are, you kind of get into out of sight, out of mind a little bit, and we've kind of seen that with like some mid-major teams that were really good but maybe didn't win the conference tournament that play in that first week. I'm thinking mainly and specifically of the Missouri Valley, where you get those teams and then, you know, they kind of get forgotten about because you have all these other teams on the bubble. And but the one thing I think that is kind of an edge for a Nebraska in a short turnaround situation, they're the number two team in defensive efficiency in the conference. And they rank in the top three in both two-point and three-point defense. They're actually first in three-point defense. They don't really foul a lot. They're second in effective field goal percentage in the league behind Michigan State. So, you know, this is a Nebraska team that you're not really sure what to make of them. I mean, they're better than I think that they're giving credit for, but if you look at their profile, they really haven't beaten it. They really haven't beaten the top teams. And, you know, they got a break in the schedule. They probably should have ended up beating Kansas in December in that game at home and ended up losing by one, and they made that comeback, and it looked like they were going to win the game but ended up losing by one at the end. You know, had they won that game, we wouldn't even be talking about this. They'd be in the tournament. And, you know, I think that they are kind of an interesting team. I don't know if I really want to pick them to win the Big Ten tournament. I'm not saying they can't. But, you know, I think it's almost all going to come down to Friday for them against Michigan in that 4-5 game, that kind of second game of Friday afternoon.
Yeah, and that's the problem is, you know, you've got 21-1 on them, and, you know, it's a very easy hedge to go ahead and take Michigan right away. But, you know, the thing for Nebraska is if they win Friday, in all likelihood, they don't win Saturday. It's going to be very hard for them to beat Michigan State. So you've got a team at a decent price that is a four seed that gets the double bye, but at the same time, they're a clear underdog in both of their games here. So, you know, even if they do somehow make it through to the finals, you've hedged out a good chunk of the value on that 21-1 because you've kind of had to. So, you know, they are a really, really hard bet to make. Maybe if you really want to try them, you just go with a money line rollover and see what happens there, because they're a dog to Michigan. They're a significant dog, double digit dog to Michigan State. And they'd be a dog, you know, they'd be a dog to, you know, probably Purdue or Ohio State or, you know, whoever makes it out of the bottom of that bracket. So, you know, it is a challenging thing to take them, but, you know, again, I mean, if they win Friday and they're in the tournament, then you also run into a situation of, yeah, they play Michigan State, but if they feel like they're over the hump, you know, do you get a full effort from them? If they get down early, do they kind of pack it in? Do they try for that close loss to put some, you know, cosmetic touches on it to where the committee can say, well, they lost, but, you know, they only lost by 5 as opposed to losing by, you know, 20. I don't know. It's such a weird situation. But then also one final thought about Nebraska, and then we'll do a couple of golf thoughts here. They are the team with all the pressure in this tournament, and they know it. And if they play tight against Michigan, a Michigan team that's already played a game at MSG, a place that's, you know, notoriously tough to play at anyway, that's a big-time problem for Nebraska if they're too tight. So it's a weird situation all around.
Yeah, and I mean, it kind of shakes out, you know, looking at a lot of these teams. A lot of these teams really didn't get the greatest straws. I mean, we kind of talked about Ohio State having to play kind of who's been the thorn in their side this year, Penn State. And then if they get by that, then they have to play either an Indiana team that's swept, that's motivated, or have to play a Purdue team that they beat in West Lafayette, who's clearly motivated. And that's why you're seeing that in the price. And, you know, talking about Nebraska and whatnot, I think there's a lot of teams that got some kind of tough draws here in terms of who they get to match up against. I mean, Michigan State probably has the best draw because they're the number one seed. And, you know, I think them and Michigan probably got the best because, I mean, I think that they're kind of playing with house money in these games because I think Michigan State has probably done enough, even if they don't win the Big Ten tournament. I think they've probably done enough to be a one seed. I mean, you know, they're at least minimum going to be a two. So, I mean, and then you look at Michigan, they're clearly in the tournament and will get a pretty solid seed. So, I mean, this is kind of all gravy. And sometimes the team that has to be in a must-win, and I'm not necessarily specifically referring to this game, the team that's in the must-win situation, there's often a premium put in the point spread because they're in a must-win situation. And sometimes that team doesn't win. You know, sometimes a team with no pressure, where it's kind of just gravy to get a win, ends up winning the game. So that's something I think to keep in mind also going forward.
All right, so we will spend a couple of minutes here on the WGC Mexico Championship. This is the first of two WGC events coming up this month. You've got the match day coming up a little bit later in the month of March. And, you know, Wes, this is a challenging handicap because this tournament used to be the WGC Cadillac at Trump Doral. Trump made some comments during the or out on the campaign trail that, you know, PGA Tour officials weren't real happy with, decided to leave the partnership that they had with Doral. Now they play in Mexico on the outskirts of Mexico City. Dustin Johnson won this thing last year, but we only have one event worth of course form data to use.
Yeah, this was actually an event that was probably, when I kind of looked back and did an inventory on my season last year, you're going to have really good events, and then you're going to have kind of middling events, and then you're going to have bad events. This was actually one of my worst events because, you know, I had been obviously handicapping and doing Doral for years, and I kind of wish it was still at Doral. I think it would have been – it's a lot easier for the players in terms of scheduling, and I think moving this event to Mexico, hey, even though it's a nice course – moving this event down there, and I have no problem with Mexico having a PGA Tour event, really, I think, kind of screwed a couple other tournaments, specifically the Honda Classic, even though they ended up having a pretty good tournament and a good finish last week. But, you know, some of these tournaments in the Florida Swing kind of lose out a little bit in terms of quality of player field because of the Mexico tournament. I mean, you've got 45 of the top 50 players, that's an awesome field any week. But you do have some major names that skipped this week. Hideki Matsuyama, Rory McIlroy, Jason Day, Henrik Stenson, of course, Brooks Koepka out for an injury. So you got five big names that are out of this event. But, I mean, one thing at least we do have is we do have at least a year of data to actually go on, unlike last year. And, I mean, we do have a potential correlation in terms of the Poa Nua bent grass greens and the Kukulia fairways that are lined with trees. So very similar, at least there's a somewhat of a correlation with Riviera in that regard.
So did you use that then in terms of some of the players that you've tipped for this week?
A little bit. I mean, not exclusively. I mean, I saw a lot of people tipping Bubba Watson. I didn't particularly tip him here, even though I did use him at Riviera again, simply because he has great history there. And I thought, you know, and I saw a little bit of progress in his game where he was playing better of late, but not really in contention. And, but I thought, you know, when you get to a course that you're so comfortable with and have success at, which we've talked about before, and I thought that was a good week for Bubba, and he ended up winning. But, I did use a couple guys that I did use at Riviera and a couple guys that also did play well there. I did use Phil Mickelson at 25-1 this week, and I mean, he's kind of a guy that I haven't seen a lot of people tip this week, but I think has the potential to really do well here. His last three starts, I mean, this is a guy that's 47 years old. Now, he's played courses that he was experienced at, like Riviera, Pebble Beach, and Phoenix. And his last three starts, he's 5th, 2nd, and 6th. So, I mean, that's probably part of it. So that maybe takes a little bit of true value away. But he also finished 7th here last year. So, you know, this is a guy that I think has some experience. When 274, 10 under par, finished 4 back of the eventual winner, Dustin Johnson, went 67, 68, 68, 71. So, unfortunately, he didn't make a move in the final round, but he was right there going into that final round last year. And I think he's a guy that could play very well here. This is an elevation. You are going to see, I think, a lot of these guys you know, get some boost, at least in terms of their driving numbers. And that might actually be good for Phil, because it's adding, you know, the average of 15% to your distance here. And it might allow Phil not to have to maybe take driver and let him take the 3-wood instead, because we know that Phil can kind of, he can still hit it out there, but he can spray it with that driver. So, you know, if it allows Phil to hit 3-wood a little bit more, I think that really benefits him. Another guy that did go well at Riviera that I looked at, he ended up finishing 4th. He was the co-leader going into the final round. I did use Patrick Cantlay as well at 33-1. Did not play this event last year, but I like the Riviera correlation. Thomas Peters was another guy I used at 35-1. Didn't. Kind of ended up disappointing at Riviera, made the cut, but never really contended. Was 13th last week in some really tough conditions at the Honda, you know, where you wouldn't think that he would play well, because he hasn't always played well in kind of adverse weather conditions. But went with him this week. He was 5th here last year ended up finishing at 11 under, 3 shots behind the leader, was in the 60s all 4 rounds, was one of the only players in the field. He was actually the only player in last year's field that broke 70 all 4 days. So, you know, I think he's a good go. Another guy that's a big hitter, Tony Finau, at 40-1, did not play here last year, but ended up 2nd at Riviera. So, and he's also got a 6th-place finish, so 2 top 10 finishes to kind of start the year. He's playing well. This is at elevation, so you would think it would help a big hitter like him. And then another guy I did play was Sergio at 28-1, who's already got a win this year over on the European Tour. Actually, he won over in Asia. So I think you know, this isn't a tournament where you're going to probably take a ton of guys, because there's only, I believe the number is 65 in terms of total players in the field. So, you know, this isn't something you could go crazy on. But, you know, I think you could find some good value with a handful, 4 or 5 guys. I know, you know, Justin Thomas won last week, so a lot of people are playing him. Dustin Johnson won this event last year, so a lot of people are going to play him. John Rahm was 3rd. Norrie has a win this year, so a lot of people are going to play him. But and also Fleetwood, who kind of started his ascendancy to kind of the top 10 to 15 players in the world with the 2nd-place finish last year, also already has a win this year at Abu Dhabi. But I think you can maybe go a little bit off the beaten path and maybe kind of find a little bit of value with those second tier guys this week.
Yeah, I know you've got some big hitters here on the list, like a guy like Thomas Peters, and he's a guy that I threw in my daily fantasy article over at bangthebook.com as well. But another guy that I want to throw out there, I'm not sure if you took too much of a look at this one, but I looked at Matthew Fitzpatrick. Now, again, as you mentioned, this is a tournament played at elevation. Fitzpatrick won the Omega European Masters last year in Switzerland, which is way, way up there in elevation, and he was runner-up in 2015. So I don't know if it really helps to have you know, a lot of success in these courses that are at altitude. But if you are looking for angles and maybe looking for possible edges, you know, for our listeners out there, I think that along with the guys that Wes tipped, and Wes is much better at this than I am, but I thought that Fitzpatrick was maybe a guy that kind of stood out because he's had, you know, some decent performances here at some of the elevation courses.
Yeah, I would agree with your analysis on that. And I mean, you know, also with some of these guys, if you're not maybe doing full tournament futures, you know, you could play a little bit with the top 10 market as well in this. I mean, I put a couple long shots for top 10s like Jorge Campillo, Johnny Vegas, you know, guys that were around 15-1 for a top 10. But looking at Fitz, I think he's about 55-1. He's about 4 or 5-1 at the top 10. And, you know, I certainly don't disagree with your analysis on him and the correlation with the Omega Masters. You know, slow start to the year, but I don't think that means anything. He did play this course last year and was 16th. So, you know, this isn't he's not a guy that you want to ignore for sure.
Well, Wes Reynolds, whose work you can find on Twitter at WesReynolds1, number one. And also, you know, I had a listener question a couple of weeks ago in the Monday mailbag about the competition that we've got and my thoughts on some of it and, you know, how the industry's been progressing. And Wes has a byline now over at the Action Network. And Wes, I just want to congratulate you on that. It's a very good resource for people that, you know, don't mind paywall that a lot of the content is behind. But I know that you do fantastic work, and I'm good to see that you've got a home to write some of this stuff out as well.
Well, thank you, Adam. I appreciate that. I'm glad to be aboard, and I'm you know, and I think it shows the growth a little bit in the sport betting industry in terms of, you know, being able to make a living, being able to put content out there. I mean, it used to be you either ran book and took book, you either bet, or you either, you know, sold your traditional tout-based selling plays model. And I think this is a little bit different. And then I think, you know, you have a sport betting network out there now on the radio with VSiN. You have what we're doing with Action Network in terms of content and a wide array of sports. I mean, we have DFS content, and then we have betting content. It's behind a paywall, but it's not, you know, we're not selling picks. I mean, it's a content-based site, and I think it has a little bit of something for everyone. I mean, if you're a DFS player but not a traditional bettor, you know, they've better but not a great DFS player. And I'll admit, you know, like on my golf, I'm a lot better at the traditional futures and matchups market than I really am at DFS. You know, I've always been kind of mediocre at golf DFS. So, you know, there's a lot of different things to learn out there. And I think what you guys are doing with Bang the Book and what we do with this podcast here, I mean, I think it's good for the industry to have this content out there and have more opportunities for people to get involved in the industry, whether they're a traditional bettor or not. And as, you know, legislation hopefully happens across the country in various states, you know, I think that this is going to get bigger and it's going to be a lot more hospitable for people to get involved.
Well, and as I said, you can follow Wes on Twitter at Wes Reynolds, the number one. Wes, thank you so much, man. We'll talk to you again next week.
All right, Adam. Always a pleasure, man.
Good stuff there today with Wes Reynolds. Again, that's at Wes Reynolds and the number one on Twitter. All right, everybody. Deep breath. If you tune out for any length of time here during this segment with Kyle Hunter from huntersportspicks.com, you are guaranteed to miss something. Kyle, how's it going today, man?
Going well, man. Busy show here ahead of us, right?
Yeah, a little bit. We are going to go over 9 conference tournaments here. 9 on this show. America East, Colonial, Horizon, MAAC, Missouri Valley, Ohio Valley, SoCon, Summit, West Coast Conference. But, you know, and I'll just spend a couple of seconds here on this intro, but you and I have been talking off the air a lot about these tournaments, a lot about the odds that are out there for them. And you know what? I think that even though we've been doing this for as long as we have, we're still like kids in a candy store when it comes to conference tournament time. We love it, and hopefully our listeners can hear that and also get some important tips here out of it.
Oh, yeah, this is a great time of the year. We love seeing all these different odds, trying to find some value on the, you know, the really underrated teams or a favorite that's too short of a price. It's just it's fascinating how you know, from one year to the next, how things can change. And then obviously so many matchup-based plays and, you know, looking at that bracket and trying to figure out who's the weak seed, the weak, you know, number two seed, the weak number three seed, you know, and trying to play something from that side. Every single year there's something new, and I love it.
Yeah, I do too. And unfortunately here, I'll also be getting my Indians home opener tickets as we're doing this segment. So, you know, as if things couldn't get even more crazy, you know, the pre-sale starts at noon. So, you know, fantastic timing for that. So if I do sound a little bit distracted for a couple seconds here, I do apologize, but Kyle usually carries me on these shows anyway, so it's perfectly fine. All right, let's go ahead and dive in here. And we will start with the America East, which we don't have to spend a whole lot of time on because as I'm looking right now, I still don't see odds on this conference. Vermont, the favorite, whenever odds come out, if odds come out, this thing starts on Saturday, so odds should be out maybe Friday-ish. They will be an overwhelming favorite here. They were 15-1 in conference play. They've been a team that's gone to the big dance before. Without having odds, it's kind of tough to figure this whole thing out. But any thoughts that you do want to pass along with the AEC?
I think Vermont, when these odds come out, they're going to be a really big favorite here, maybe minus 300, something like that. You know, Vermont's just by far the best team in this league. It'd be really surprising if somebody beat Vermont here. I will say Hartford would be the team that I would look at as a sleeper here. They won against Albany and Vermont here during the course of the season. Also picked up a win against Rutgers. So this is a Hartford team that, though they've been inconsistent, they've been able to beat some of the top teams. And, you know, to me, that's what you want in an underdog or a sleeper in a conference like this, is a team that's at least proven that they can do it. Now, like I said, Hartford hasn't done it consistently, but they won at Rutgers 60-58, at Albany 72-64, and then they won against Vermont on the road 69-68 on February 18th. You know, they have some confusing losses in there as well. You know, two losses to UNBC, lost to Portland, Brooklyn, teams like that. So they're not consistent, but, you know, I think if you take Hartford, you'll probably end up having a money line rollover that'll be better than the futures price. So, you know, that would be the only one I'd even consider. But, you know, without odds, it's hard to say. And I have to say that, you know, I'll be really surprised if somebody other than Vermont wins this one.
Yeah, and of course, this is a conference that's unlined. We do get some Vermont lines occasionally in the non-conference when they play somebody. But this is one that's at the campus sites, eight teams in this tournament. And also, this is one of those leagues that reseeds, which, quite frankly, it makes a lot of sense for these very low majors to reseed because you want to give Vermont the best possible path to get to the NCAA tournament and maybe do something in the NCAA tournament because that's obviously the goal that you're looking for as a conference. So this thing will reseed. Quarterfinals March 3rd, semis March 6th, championship game at 11 a.m. Saturday, March 10th. So a little bit of a kegs and eggs type of championship game there with that one. So again, without odds for that one, we'll move on pretty quickly. Let's go to the Colonial Athletic Association. This one at the North Charleston Coliseum, College of Charleston, the de facto home team, but this is not their home venue. They do play on campus. This is not on campus. They're the number one seed, had a head-to-head tiebreaker over Northeastern. They were 2-0 in those games. They're also the favorite, plus 140, Northeastern, plus 250. Hofstra, plus 525 is the three seed. Four seed William & Mary is below five seed Towson. Towson's plus 700, William & Mary plus 900. UNC Wilmington, the reigning two-time champion in this league, they're 20-1, but they were 10-20 in the regular season, 7-11 in conference play. What do you think about the Colonial?
I'm surprised I don't see any more value in this conference than what I do. I feel like these odds are pretty solid. I will say, you know, Northeastern had the best defense in the conference this year. I think defense is really important this time of the year. Plus 250, a decent price on Northeastern. I'm not going to fire on it. I couldn't blame anybody if they did. I think this is a wide-open league. I will say I think maybe the best potential here to look at one of the bottom teams and look for a money line rollover, a team like an Elon, a James Madison, you know, it wouldn't be shocking if a team like that made a run several games here. And I don't think that their odds are nearly long enough. You know, a team like Elon plus 4,500, not even close to what you'd get with a money line rollover. James Madison the same way, plus 5,000. You know, Drexel at plus 12,500. that might be a good enough price. But try to decide which one of those lower teams that you like is what I would say. Same thing with UNC Wilmington. If you like them, you can do better than plus 2,000 also. William & Mary is a team that, you know, you like to try to root for because they've never been able to do it. But William & Mary is a team that plays no defense, very reliant on jump shots. You know, could they shoot their way through this tournament and win it? Of course they could. I don't like to bet on things like that. You know, that's as we talk about, that can be kind of dangerous, especially at these neutral sites. North Charleston Coliseum, a slight under trend as far as long-term. Nothing major here, but, you know, I wouldn't mind taking some first half unders here. Certainly not, you know, Madison Square Garden or one of the toughest, but a slight under trender here. College of Charleston is certainly the most likely to win this conference tournament, but I don't think plus 140 is good enough on the odds there.
No, I mean, of course, Charleston doesn't really have to travel for this thing, so maybe that's built into the price a little bit as well. But one thing I do want to expand on a little bit here with the CAA is that you mentioned that North Charleston Coliseum, you know, did show a little bit of a slight trend to the under. And, you know, this is, excuse me, just the second year that they're having this conference tournament here. Last year was the first time UNC Wilmington beat Charleston in the final game to punch a ticket to March Madness. And, you know, I think that the shooting backdrop here and the neutral site and the unfamiliar venue is a big deal because, as you mentioned, Northeastern, the best defensive team in this league, College of Charleston, maybe the most balanced. You've got teams like Hofstra and William & Mary that can fill it up, but they can't defend anybody. So, you know, that's why it's a little bit challenging to take teams like that where, you know, we have a venue where we only have 1 year of data for the conference tournament. And, you know, if you don't shoot well in something like this in a one-and-done format, you're kind of screwed. So Hofstra, William & Mary have a tough draw here. I think that's why you're kind of looking towards the bottom of the conference to see if one of those teams can get hot and make a move.
Yeah, definitely. This is one of those spots where I don't want a team that's just a jump shot oriented team. I don't want somebody that's shooting threes all the time. Of course they could win the tournament. You know, anything can happen in a tournament like this, but you know, I don't think the odds are good enough. I think that you want to look for a team that, you know, obviously you want a team with some balance, and the top two teams both have some pretty good balance. I think Clemson has usually been the best defense in this conference, and I think they're second or third in defense this year. Northeastern was first in the conference. So to me, you know, it's they're the most likely winners, but I don't see that much value. I'd say Northeastern is close to being good enough, but not quite for me. Like I say, I think you could look to try to grab one of the teams that, you know, 7, 8, 9, 10 seed, see if you can get a couple wins in a row out of them with a money line rollover. And then, you know, if you want to stop, you can just stop. Or if you want to put some of that bet back on the next one, you can keep going. And that's what makes the money line rollover nice.
Well, and there was one example that we can give here. And, again, I don't want to spend too much time on it, but the Longwood Lancers, they're up there in the Big South Conference. They were at 400-1 to win their conference tournament. And this is an 8-team league. So it's not like this is a deep league of 14 or, you know, 16 teams or something like that. This is a very small conference tournament, or maybe it's 10. But anyway, they won their first game. And if you've got 400-1 and they win a game for you, then, you know, that opens up a lot of opportunities. And Longwood did do that. You and I kind of talked about this one a little bit. We were both kicking ourselves a little bit that we didn't just throw, I mean, at 400-1, you throw $5 on it and whatever happens, happens. They did win a game. Now you open up some hedging opportunities. So, you know, in a conference like this where you don't have a significant long shot like that, or maybe I guess you kind of do with a team like Drexel at 125-1, you really only need one win to start figuring something out. Two wins would be fantastic. So, you know, in a tournament like this where Charleston and Northeastern had the best records, do look like the two best teams, but maybe a little bit weak in terms of one and two seeds, that's why you start looking down the board for some of those other opportunities.
Yeah, definitely. I think that this is a spot where, you know, we don't have one exactly like that Longwood example, but I think that that's a good one to point out that, you know, when you find value, even if it's on a really bad team, you can go ahead and fire. And, you know, like you said, you don't have to put very much on it to create a good hedging opportunity. I know both of us wish that we had done it in that case.
I mean, it's just, it's like they didn't have a shot to win the conference tournament, and I get that, but 400-1 is insanity. I mean, we've seen crazy things happen before, and probably nothing as crazy as a team like that winning a conference tournament. But still, all they have to do is win one game, and they did it. So, I mean, maybe that's something that we need to look at here as we look ahead to next year. All right, we'll move on from the CAA to the Horizon League. This one starts on March 2nd, so this one will begin here coming up on Friday. This is a very unique conference tournament, and before we give out the odds, I want to talk about this for a second. It is at Little Caesars Arena in Detroit, Michigan. It has never been there before. Was it Joe Louis Arena the last 2 years? Now you've got the new arena there in Motown for Motor City Madness. How do you approach a tournament like this, Kyle, where you've got a new venue and you don't have any data on it?
You know, there's no data as far as knowing whether it's a good under arena or not. I don't know the arena to know whether it, you know, has a bad shooting backdrop or not. I will say when it's a new arena like this, I tend to think that in the first half of the early games, it's going to be more difficult for them shooting-wise. So I would look to the first half under. You know, if anybody knows whether this does have a more difficult shooting backdrop, if you know that for sure, then I would definitely look to first half unders. I think that, you know, there's a feeling out process with a new place. That's another reason why I like defensive teams even more, especially in the early round games here, because if you're a team that's relying on shooting the three ball and you go into a new place, first of all, you're going to have jitters and nerves to start with, obviously, because this is a win or go home situation for these teams. So with the jitters and the nerves, and you combine a new arena, you know, usually they've been playing in a place that they're accustomed to playing in. This is a new place, so, you know, I think that adds a different element to where, again, you want defense, you want a team that has some balance, and, you know, not a team that's just settling on long jumpers.
Well, and I think another thing here, too, is that, as I mentioned, this was at Joe Louis Arena the last 2 years. Joe Louis Arena was not set up for basketball. The Pistons, of course, played at the Palace of Auburn Hills, which is about 45 minutes northwest of Detroit. This arena actually is the home of the Detroit Pistons. So maybe the shooting backdrop is a little bit better. Maybe the lighting is better. Everything is, you know, kind of built with, you know, the multi-purpose basketball and hockey in mind. So I don't know if that creates any sort of situation. I guess we'll just have to wait and see what happens as these teams get going. Northern Kentucky, the very clear favorite here. They're almost even money at five dimes, about plus 102. Wright State, the two seed, plus 305. Oakland, the de facto home team here, they're plus 420, despite being a four seed. You've got Illinois, Chicago, 1,100. They're the three seed. Milwaukee's plus 1,350. Green Bay, 40-1, and then on down from there with teams that don't really have a chance to win this thing. So, Kyle, looking at this thing from a futures standpoint, and this is one of those interesting tournaments where the quarterfinals are split into 2 days. Northern Kentucky and Wright State play Saturday. They won't play again until Monday. The 3, 4, 5, 6 teams play Sunday, and we'll have to play the back-to-back on Monday. So, you know, taking all that into account, what do you think? You think there's some value in this league?
Well, Northern Kentucky certainly is the best team in this league, but I don't see value at plus 102. I'd like to look for the bottom of this bracket and try to find a money line rollover candidate here. I haven't decided where I'm going to go with this one. I think either Wisconsin, Milwaukee, or Green Bay. This league has had a lot of underdogs make runs in the past. I remember Milwaukee made that long run last year to the final game. UIC has potential, but UIC to me is in a really weird spot here. Their star player, Dikembe Dixon, easily their best player, announced a few days ago that he's going to transfer at the end of the season. I think that's certainly really weird timing. You know, I wouldn't think that would help the team in any way, at least. You know, I don't know that it hurts them badly, but it can't help. You know, I think you have to try to stay away from Northern Kentucky. They're just so good on both ends of the floor. Oakland, you know, I mean, that's not a good enough price for me. You know, I know that they could win this tournament, no doubt about that. They still probably have the most talent. Without Marchez Walker, you could argue that maybe Northern Kentucky has better talent than them. But Oakland has a lot more talent than they've played like they have this year. To me, though, you know, you want to try to go to the bottom of the bracket and find somebody who could knock off a team like UIC, could knock off a team like Wright State. Wright State's a really good defensive team, so they could certainly win this tournament, and it wouldn't surprise me. But I think a team like Green Bay has a chance to win a couple games. I think a team like Milwaukee has a chance to win a couple games. I don't think these futures prices are good enough for them, especially not for Milwaukee at plus 1350. So I think you want to try to go to that bottom of the bracket and see who you can get.
No, I think that makes a lot of sense. And one of the things about Wright State that I was looking at is, you know, because they are such a good defensive team, and I'm trying to handicap what this venue is going to play like, what the shooting backdrop is going to be like here, you know, part of me gravitates toward Wright State because if they are a really good defensive team that is a little bit offensively challenged and the arena decides to play as an under arena, which it certainly could, and we don't really know that, you know, maybe I'm getting some good value there in that plus 300, plus 305 type of range. But then the follow-up question is, instead of worrying about Wright State playing these games beforehand, you know, what, let's say that they do run into Northern Kentucky in the championship game. Let's say that the chalk does hold up here. What money line price can I go ahead and get on Wright State just in that championship game, as opposed to playing the future and maybe running into some landmines in the quarters or the semis? So, you know, that's another thing you have to kind of weigh here when you're looking at playing, say, a number two or a number three team from a future standpoint.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, you know, Wright State would be a pretty significant underdog against Northern Kentucky. So, you know, neutral court, I think Wright State would be at least a 4.5-point underdog against Northern Kentucky. So you could still get a pretty decent money line price. I think this is one of those spots where Wright State could win it. Wright State plus 305, probably not good enough. You know, to me, Wright State does have some landmines down there to where they're not a good enough team to where you can just assume that they're going to beat anybody here in the bottom of this conference. You know, Detroit is the weakest team in this league. If Detroit were to upset Green Bay, then that helps Wright State quite a bit. They'd have one easy win. You know, but then if they play Illinois, Chicago, or Milwaukee, they could lose to either one of their teams very easily. So I don't think plus 305 is good enough. I think that Wright State certainly has a chance to win it, but I don't see enough value in that price.
Yeah, I mean, I certainly don't think so either. And that is such an interesting consideration, to say the least, is that, you know, you have to try and figure out what these teams are going to look like once we get that far down the line. And, you know, I mean, I realistically don't know. And so, you know, that's why you kind of want to project ahead a little bit and see if you can figure out, you know, what these individual single game lines are going to look like. So, you know, I'm just curious to see how this tournament plays out. And, you know, maybe you sort of take a little bit of a lighter approach here this year and then kind of get some data on this arena, and then you'll be set up better for next year.
Yeah, I think that's a good way to go about this one. I don't see anything really strong I like. Like I said, I think I'll probably take a money line roll over on one of these underdogs and play it small. I am curious to see what this arena does. And, you know, I think a really good thing to do would be watch the first half of the first game that everybody plays here. And I think that'll tell us quite a bit. If you see an up and down tempo, a really quick game, but it's still low scoring, that's going to be pretty indicative of something.
All right, I'm actually ordering these tickets right now, so I'm going to see if we can come up with something to talk about for just a second before I transition over. And I guess, you know what, we'll go ahead and talk about the MAAC, because we touched on this one a little bit on Monday's segment, talking about, you know, how good of an under venue this has been. And, you know, that can sort of dictate what you look to do from a futures standpoint as well, because, you know, those teams that sort of rely on offense and kind of live on offense, you know, it's a difficult place for them to be.
Absolutely. This is a conference where I actually played Canisius here, but the price was quite a bit better. It was almost plus 300. Now it's plus 205. I don't see enough value to take Canisius at plus 205. This is an interesting one because Siena gets to host the conference tournament. You know, it's kind of weird for a 10 seed to get to host the conference tournament. This has been a tremendous under arena. I mean, it's the best one that there is as far as conference tournaments. You know, Madison Square Garden is the best under arena in general. But if you sort these sites for the best under percentages, this one has been the best over the years. So it's interesting to me that it's that consistently good for the under. Like I said earlier this week, I really think that part of that is because there are so many high totals in this conference. And, you know, you're going to be able to catch some under 160, under 162, because you have these teams that play so fast, put up a bunch of shots. But, you know, consistently year after year, you've had a lot of unders because the shooting percentages have been so bad. So don't be surprised if you see a game that, that plays to a pace of 77, 78, 79, which is really fast, but somehow is still, you know, a 75 to 70 type of game instead of a, you know, 90 to 85 type of game. So that's the thing that I'd want to do most in this conference is look for unders, especially on the highest numbers. I think first half unders with, you know, first half totals in the mid 70s and higher would be a good value as well. So I think you look to try to find the right spots to take unders here. Like I said, I like Canisius here. I don't really like the price anymore, but I think this is certainly an interesting conference tournament.
Yeah, you got Canisius here at about 2-1. I think when this one opened, we saw it at plus 285 or something like that. That's the price that I've got in the preview I had posted over at bangthebook.com right now. Ryder, who is the top seed, is plus 315. Iona, who's the fourth seed, is plus 345. Niagara is the three seed in this tournament. They're a very good offensive team, but again, we talk about the shooting backdrop being a potential problem for them. They are 10-1 as the three seed here. Siena, as you mentioned, the home team in the 10 seed, plus 1350. Manhattan and Monmouth both 15-1 on down from there. And, you know, this is one of those where Ryder sort of gets a tough draw being the number one because they're probably going to run into Iona in that semifinal game on March 4th. And that's why you do see Canisius as the favorite.
Yeah, and I know that Niagara's Matt Scott has been injured. He was the third leading scorer in the MAAC. I think that's probably why Niagara is as long of a shot as they are. I'm not sure whether he's going to try to come back, but I know he hasn't been playing the last few games. And Niagara doesn't have any defense. So Niagara is pretty reliant on outscoring people and without one of their top scorers and in a venue that's not good for shooting. You know, it makes sense that they'd be a little bit of a long shot. I'm surprised they're plus 1,000, to be honest with you. But, you know, an under-the-radar one that could make a run here to me, Monmouth. You know, Monmouth has a high potential. So this is one that I think the money line rollover would probably do better than plus 1,500. I haven't figured this one up yet. But Monmouth is a team to me that has one of the higher upsides here in this conference. I don't know that I love their route here as far as the bracket playing out. You know, they play St. Peter's, a tricky team, in the first game, so they don't even get one easy game. And then they would have to play Ryder right away and then probably Iona. So they don't have a very easy path here, which makes me think that the money line rollover would be better than 1,500. I think that Monmouth does have the potential to spring several upsets, though.
Yeah, and this is one of those conferences where it's really challenging because you've got these 11 teams, and basically all 11 of them play completely different styles. Canisius and Niagara and Iona do like to push the pace a little bit. St. Peter's is traditionally one of the slowest teams in college basketball. Quinnipiac has a very interesting offensive scheme, or a offensive and defensive scheme, really, that I know we talked about on last year's shows. Manhattan likes to slow it down and play some defense, so you got a lot of pace wars in this league. You got a lot of teams where, you know, it just seems like they're kind of higher variants. But, you know, what will be interesting to see is, you know, Iona was a team going in the NCAA tournament the last few years that, you know, I think they played five of the six finals here in this conference tournament. They've been a team that people look at going into March Madness and saying, well, they could win a game. I don't think there's anybody this year that you would say that about.
No, I don't see anybody that I think would win a game here. I see several teams that I'd be interested in looking at it over if they were playing against somebody that played at a quick tempo, because I see a lot of bad defenses in this conference. You know, this is a conference where it usually takes a bunch of points to win a game, and I can't imagine any of these teams in this league pulling an upset in the Big Dance.
All right, so let's go to the Missouri Valley Conference here. We talked a little bit about Arch Madness on yesterday's show with Tony George. We'll get some more thoughts here from Kyle Hunter on today's show, and you've got this one at the Scott Trade Center in St. Louis. And, you know, this is such an interesting conference tournament this year because you don't have that overwhelming minus 400, minus 450 favorite in Wichita State, but you do have a very clear front runner in Loyola Chicago, who's a minus money favorite here, minus 103. Bradley, who's the five seed, is the number two favorite at plus 725. Missouri State, who's the seven seed, is plus 800. Southern Illinois, the two seed, plus 825. Illinois State, plus 825. And the team that you and I both like, Indiana State at plus 1240.
I think Indiana State's a really good value here. I think this is one of those cases where you have a really weak two seed, in my opinion, in Southern Illinois. Now, could Southern Illinois win this tournament? Of course they could. I just think they're a weak two seed. I think that Illinois State probably has the second most talent of any team in this conference, but Illinois State's really banged up. They have a lot of guys that are playing through pain, guys that sat out a lot at the end of this regular season. Indiana State matches up pretty well against them. You know, certainly Indiana State could lose the first game, and, you know, this would just be a, you know, a ticket that looked like it had a lot of value. But I think, you know, you got plus 1240 at five dimes, plus 1250 at Heritage on Indiana State. To me, Indiana State's a really nice price there because, you know, Indiana State's a team that, to me, they have a lot better shot than those odds would imply. You know, that's an implied probability of winning it at 7.41%. I don't think that's nearly high enough. I think their odds would probably be about double that as far as their chance of winning it. And, again, this is one of those spots where Indiana State would not be a significant underdog against anyone other than Loyola Chicago. So you have plenty of hedging opportunities if you take Indiana State. Indiana State has a good coach. Lansing's done a good job with this program. You know, at the bottom of the bracket down there, there's nobody that really scares you. And that's why, you know, I think even if you don't like Indiana State, I think what you want to try to do is find somebody at the bottom of the bracket because I don't think you want to go against Loyola Chicago. They've been so consistent throughout the course of the season. Missouri State, I'm surprised. I mean, those odds. Missouri State was the preseason favorite. They were supposed to be the best team in this league. But plus 800 on a team that's played as poorly as them, I certainly would not take plus 800. I would take a money line rollover if I was taking Missouri State. You know, like I say, I think Indiana State has the most value. I couldn't blame anybody if they wanted to take Illinois State either. I think Illinois State could certainly roll right to the championship game and not be very surprising at all. But I think plus 1240, plus 1250 is too long of a price there.
Yeah, I think so too. And one of the challenges for Missouri State is that they've got to play a second game, or a fourth game, I should say. They have to play that first round game against Missouri State or against Valparaiso at 8:30, turn around and play at 6 the next day. If they win that game, they'd have to turn around and play at 5 the next day. So this is a pretty challenging schedule for them. And this is one of those I talked about with Wes Reynolds in the previous segment, where the team that wins the second semifinal game on Saturday night, that game is supposed to tip at 5 p.m. Central Time. Who knows if it will? Might not be done until 7:30. Might not be done until 8. If you get a semifinal game in the first one that goes, you know, overtime, maybe two overtimes, that game doesn't end until 9 or 10. And you've got to come back and play at 1 o'clock in the afternoon on Sunday. So there is certainly a big advantage to being Loyola Chicago here, to where you've got that extra rest time. But, you know, for Indiana State, certainly looks like a good value at the bottom of the bracket. I do want to spend a couple seconds here talking about money line rollover versus the futures price. And, you know, what you want to do is you want to calculate out the long-term spreads for these games, and then you can go to a spread to money line calculator or converter. There's a bunch of those out there on the internet, and get a baseline and get an idea of what you think a team's price will be in each specific game, and then decide if the money line rollover or the futures price is a better option for you. Now, Kyle, as you mentioned, Indiana State, maybe a dog of a point, point and a half, 2 points, something like that to Illinois State. So, you know, they're only plus 125, 130, maybe 150 on the high end in that game. In the semifinals, if they knock off Illinois State, they'll play a weak two seed in Southern Illinois, as you mentioned, maybe a small dog in that game, again, that plus 120 type of area. So you got them at plus 150, plus 120. They'll be a big dog in the final against Loyola Chicago. But a money line rollover is going to be less in this instance than the plus 1250, whereas in a lot of cases, I'm trying to think of one that we talked about on Monday's show, you know, in a lot of cases, the money line rollover is going to be larger and sometimes significantly larger than that futures price that's out there.
Yeah, I'm not even sure Indiana State would be an underdog against Southern Illinois. I think that would be about a pick-em game. So I'm sure that Indiana State's price is better here on this future than you would get with the money line rollover. I remember we talked about Nebraska the other day when it was plus 1,000. Now, there's certainly better odds out there on Nebraska now, but I still think it was a good example of a money line rollover candidate. To me, if you want it, like I said, if you want in Missouri State, you take a money line rollover here. Probably Illinois State a money line rollover too, but it'd be a close one at +825. I think it'd be hard to take anybody at the top of this bracket. Bradley, I'm surprised they're the second favorite, to be honest with you. Bradley has some injuries. Bradley's been a team that plays much better at home than they do on the road. Obviously, this is not a road game, but it's not a home game either. And then, obviously, I have to point out that Scott Trade Center is a tremendous under venue. This has been a really, really good under. I'm going to pull this up as I'm talking. The under is 53-26 in the last 79 games at the Scott Trade Center. So 53-26 is extremely significant, obviously. As I said before, the oddsmakers are onto this one. So if you like unders here in the MPC tournament, take them really early. And first half unders, you're going to have to be taking some pretty low numbers.
And there's one good point that I made on yesterday's show with Tony George when we were talking about this, is that Arch Madness doesn't have that big draw of Wichita State. So unless you're an alum of one of these schools, you know, when you've got Wichita State and you can say, okay, I'm going to go see a team that's going to be a number one or a number two seed in the NCAA tournament, that sounds like a good way to spend a Saturday night or a Sunday. I'm going to go check them out. You don't have that draw anymore. So this is now a hockey arena that seats, you know, 19, 20,000. And the championship game might have 8,000 or 9,000 people at it at most, which tells you what you're going to have for the quarters and the semis. So these teams are going to have to create their own enthusiasm, create their own adrenaline, because they're probably not going to get it from the crowd. So, you know, again, you got this big arena, smaller crowds, could be an even tougher scoring environment this year.
Yeah, I think that that's a good point because, you know, as we talked about in the past, when you get these games where you're in this massive arena, and in these, some of these first games, it's going to be really poorly attended. You know, say you have 1,500 people or 2,000 people in this massive arena, it's not good for the sight lines here. You know, this would be difficult shooting gym no matter what. And then you add that in, it's certainly an additional factor to keep in mind as you handicap these games.
All right, so we talked a little bit about the Ohio Valley Conference tournament on Monday, and this was one where, excuse me, we didn't have odds for this one. So we want to make sure that we revisit it here today. You've got Belmont and Murray State right now at five dimes, both +117 to win this thing. Now, they both get a double bye to the semifinals. So, you know, they won't play until Friday. This conference tournament actually starts tonight, Tennessee Tech and SIU Edwardsville at 6:30 Central Time. So, you know, this one gets underway pretty quickly. But then Jacksonville State +750. They're the 4 seed. Austin Peay is the 3 seed. They're 2,200. Tennessee State, Tennessee Tech, both 60-1. They're the 5 and 6 seeds here. And, you know, this is another one where you kind of talk about Arch Madness and what happens in St. Louis without Wichita State. Conference tournament used to be in Nashville. And who doesn't want to go to Nashville? And again, you had several teams within the state of Tennessee here in this conference tournament. Now they move to Evansville, Indiana. You know, if I'm an alum of Tennessee State, or, well, I mean, Tennessee State is right there in Tennessee, but if I'm an alum of Jacksonville State or Eastern Illinois or something like that, and I can go and support my alma mater while also going to Nashville and drinking and having a good time, I'm going to do it. No offense to anyone listening that's from Evansville, Indiana, but not really a tourist hotbed, I can't imagine.
No, I wouldn't think so either. I don't know if I've even been to Evansville, Indiana before, but I wouldn't imagine it's a tourist hotbed. I think that it's surprising that they moved this conference tournament. I think that it's going to be poorly attended in general, so I think that's another angle to keep an eye on. But I like Murray State here. Heritage still has Murray State at +125. I played them at +125 a couple days ago. I think Murray has at least a 50% chance of winning this tournament. To me, Murray would not be an underdog to anybody. I think Murray would be just a really slight favorite against Belmont, even in the title game. So, you know, obviously it could be a tricky game there if they play Jacksonville State. But to me, this Murray State team has really played good basketball at the right time of the year. You know, they have a really good first player, senior, and Stark. This is a team that doesn't really have a weakness. You know, they're extremely efficient on offense. They're also good on defense. I know the double bye hasn't worked out too well in this conference tournament here in the past. It's tricky in that first game, especially in the first half, as your opponent's already played the day before. So I wouldn't really look to lay the points with Murray State in that semifinal game. I do think they'll find a way to get past it, though. And they haven't won this thing in a while. I think this team should be highly motivated to win it. I think Murray State probably wins this one. You know, I wanted to try to find some value on Jacksonville State, maybe as a long shot, but it's not good enough odds there on them. I know you mentioned Tennessee State. I think Tennessee State would be a good potential for a rollover candidate. I don't think the futures odds here are good enough.
Well, what's interesting about this one, and the reason why I like Tennessee State, is Tennessee State is abhorrent offensively, and I'm putting it very, very nicely here. They are awful, 302nd in the country per KenPom and adjusted offensive efficiency, but they're a pretty good defensive team, and they do slow the pace down a little bit. And now that you've got this new venue in Evansville, I mean, this is the first time this tournament's been outside of Nashville since 2002. It was in Louisville that year. It was in Nashville every year before that, up until 1993. So you've got this brand new shooting backdrop, this new venue where no one's going to attend this tournament. And it's going to be difficult, I think, for some of the offensive teams here. For Tennessee State, they play tonight against Eastern Illinois. They're a 3.5-point favorite. They'd play tomorrow against Austin Peay. And if they win that game, they've got two sample sizes worth of data for this arena heading into that game against Belmont on Friday. Belmont's 0-2 the last 2 years with the double bye, so that has not helped them at all whatsoever. So I think Tennessee State is a pretty interesting candidate here at 60-1. I'd have to work out what the money line rollover is, because they'd be a substantial dog to both Belmont and Murray State if they got all the way to the championship game. But still, you know, I mean, right now, as I'm talking on the show without doing the math, 60-1 seems okay to me. I imagine the rollover is probably more in the 70 to 75, maybe even 80 range. So if you want to do that, you certainly can, because another nice thing about it is if they beat Belmont, massive letdown spot on Saturday against Murray State, and the way to hedge a moneyline rollover is to simply stop betting. So, you know, a moneyline rollover makes sense in that regard as well.
Yeah, and, you know, Tennessee State already proved that they can beat Belmont. They beat them 64-56 at home earlier this year. I know that was at home, but it's still important that they were able to beat one of the two top teams in this conference. You know, they lost at home to Murray State by 19. This is a Tennessee State team that really tries to slop up the game, just to be honest with you. You know, I've watched a couple of their games. It's not very easy to watch because they force so many turnovers. That's why their defense is so good, because they force so many turnovers. And on offense, the main reason they're not very good on offense is they turn the ball over a lot themselves. So there can be a lot of turnovers, a lot of ugliness in their games. Looks like they're best at forcing turnovers in the OVC. They're also worst at taking care of the basketball. So you can get some low-scoring games with Tennessee State, as you see with the total here tonight in this game. That's one that I considered the under on. I decided it was a little bit too low for me. But I think Tennessee State will have some low-scoring games in this conference tournament.
And again, we have to see how this venue plays, because if this plays as a pretty good shooting backdrop, and Evansville tends to be a pretty good jump shooting team, so maybe this is a backdrop that, you know, is pretty good for offense. If that's the case, then Tennessee State's dead in the water. So, you know, again, you just sort of, it's challenging with these new venues, but, you know, given the information that we have, we try to make the most informed decision possible. And, you know, I mean, I would err on the side of caution that offense is not a big thing here, but again, Evansville does shoot pretty well at home. So, you know, we'll have to wait and see how this whole thing plays out. All right, let's go down to the SoCon here. This one at the U.S. Cellular Center in Asheville, North Carolina. This conference tournament begins on Friday night. And obviously, you know, the big thing about this conference is you have some massive pace wars. You've got a team like the Citadel that plays zero defense whatsoever, tries to get up as many shots as possible. You've got VMI, who used to be like that. Now they're really not, because their coach is at the Citadel, oddly enough. They play each other on Friday. UNC Greensboro, the favorite here, plus 208. Furman, plus 210. East Tennessee State, plus 240. Mercer, plus 650. Wofford, 1350. And then the teams with no shot at 110 or higher. What do you think about this league, Kyle?
I think this is an interesting one. It'd be hard to say who's favored to win this one. I was a little surprised that Furman came out as the favorite initially. I know Greensboro is the favorite just barely now at 5 dimes. Heritage still has Greensboro at plus 220. So, you know, nobody knows who's going to win this one. This one's pretty wide open. East Tennessee State was the best team in this league for a long time in the course of the season. And then they go and lose their last three games in pretty ugly fashion. So I don't know what to make of them. You know, this is an East Tennessee State team that has a bunch of seniors. They could certainly right the ship, and it wouldn't surprise me, but I don't think I want to bet on it based on how they played here at the end of the season. You know, I think, you know, one of those one through three seeds is certainly most likely to win it, partially because who they play in their first game. You know, if you look at UNC Greensboro, they're going to play either the Citadel or VMI in that first game. I don't think either one of those teams match up against Greensboro. Citadel was blown out by them both times they played them. Greensboro's defense is really very, very good. That's why Greensboro's gotten to this point. You know, ETSU would play Samford or Chattanooga. Neither one of them has been good at all. And Furman plays Western Carolina in that first game. I'd say Western Carolina is the one that would have the best chance to pull an upset of those. So that's why it surprises me a little bit that Furman would have came out as the favorite here. Mercer and Wofford, Mercer has some injury problems. Brian Holland, their best player, has been injured. I'm not sure if he's going to try to play here, but I think that he's unlikely to play. Wofford, very jump shot oriented team. You know, we know that they're capable of pulling the upset. They won at North Carolina. Fletcher McGee takes a lot of threes, makes a lot of threes. But to me, Wofford is too jump shot oriented for my liking, especially since they don't play very good defense. Greensboro is who I would think is the most likely team to win this conference tournament. I like that they came close last year, and now they get a chance to go back again because they lost in that final game last year in what was a pretty close game throughout. Greensboro got a taste of it. Now, you know, they can take that one step a little bit further. I don't know if this price is good enough for me to get invested, but I do think Greensboro is the team that I like the most here.
What about this shooting backdrop here in Asheville? I mean, obviously UNC Asheville plays here, so at least we've got some data in that regard with them. And of course, you know, teams like Greensboro have a short trip. It's actually a pretty short trip for most of the schools here in this league to get over to Asheville. So at least there's that. You know, it's not like you've got some long trek to make because some of these conferences do have that. So what about this shooting backdrop? I mean, how do you feel like this is going to play, and how does that dictate? I know you said you think Greensboro is probably the team that you would look to take, probably the best defensive team in this league. Is that because this is a tough shooting backdrop, or again, you're just kind of deferring to defense a little bit?
Now, this one looks like it's pretty neutral as far as, you know, as far as over-under. So I'm really just kind of taking Greensboro because I think they're a veteran team that got so close last year, and now they have that chance to get one shot, one step further. And I do think that Greensboro having the best defense, you know, no matter where it's being played in a conference tournament, even if it is a good shooting backdrop, I like having the best defense because obviously I think defense wins championships, defense wins tournaments like this. You know, when you get down to that last game, your jump shot's not falling. If you play good enough defense, you still have a chance. If you don't play good enough defense, you're done if your jump shot's not falling. So Greensboro has two ways to win, and I like that about that.
I think this one's challenging because you've got an East Tennessee State team who a lot of people would say is the best team in this conference, but they've completely cratered here of late. They've lost four of their last five, I think it is, coming into this. And you could say that, you know, maybe Steve Forbes' team has the opportunity to wipe the slate clean. But then again, they actually have to do it before you want to buy into it. So I think that's a really tough spot with the number two team there. I think if I had to look at one that's maybe a little bit down the board, I think Mercer is a fairly decent team. And Mercer actually did, you know, knock off UNC Greensboro earlier on. They split the two regular season meetings. They won by three. They lost by four. They're the top offensive efficiency team in this league. So I think Mercer stacks up relatively well with Greensboro if you wanted to go that route. But again, the challenge here of something like that is, you know, what hedging opportunity do you really have with Mercer? And is there a letdown factor if they do wind up making it all the way to Monday? One other thing I want to point out, if you do want to take East Tennessee State here, be very, very careful because their quarterfinal game on Saturday night, they play at 8:30 Eastern time, if everything's on time. So that means they're done around 10:30, 11, something like that. They've got to come back and play at 6:30 in the semifinal game on Sunday. So a little bit of a tricky draw there for a number two seed. And those scheduling things are obviously something you want to pay attention to with these back-to-backs, as we talked about in the previous segment with Wes Reynolds, that you don't get during the regular season except for those early-in-the-year tournaments.
Yeah, I think that's definitely something to keep an eye on. You know, it's you can't blame the conferences for wanting the number one seed to have the best chance to get through, like you say. But a lot of times you'll see that those top seeds get, you know, the earlier or get the game that has more rest. So, you know, you have one of these lower seeds that play late in the day, and then they have to come back and play early the next day, where the top seed played earlier, so they got all that break. And then they have, when they play early again, well, that's what they were used to from the day before. And like I said, you know, if you're the conference, you want your best team to get through, so I don't blame them. But you got to keep that in mind when you're handicapping.
All right, so let's go to the Summit League here. And quite frankly, these last two conferences we're going to talk about today, the Summit and the West Coast, really not a whole lot to talk about in these two leagues because they are exceptionally top-heavy. So we'll head out to South Dakota here, Sioux Falls, the Denny Sanford Premier Center. This conference tournament starts on Saturday. South Dakota State is the top seed, but they are not the favorite. They are plus 120. The number two seed is South Dakota, who had three conference losses, but they are the favorite, plus 112. Fort Wayne is 1,600. North Dakota State is 1,800. Denver, 27. Oral Roberts, 55. On down from there with the 7-8s in Omaha and Western Illinois, who have to play the two South Dakota schools in the first round. This is one where you've got South Dakota State and South Dakota on action on Saturday in the quarterfinals. They have Sunday off while 3, 4, 5, 6 play. Then they come back for the semifinals on Monday. So, you know, I was kind of surprised a little bit to see South Dakota State not the favorite despite being the number one seed. And you kind of set me straight a little bit there.
Well, I have South Dakota as a slightly better team on neutral. You know, to me, this is a really hard one to find value in. I mean, this is I don't think South Dakota State or South Dakota is a particularly good value of plus 112 and plus 120. I mean, you know, they still have to play in that first round. They don't get any kind of buys, so they don't have the advantage that several of these conferences have, to where you can just get to the semifinals or quarterfinals when everybody else is playing before that. You know, so they still have to win the same amount of games. The trick is trying to figure out who to take as a long shot here. I've looked at this one quite a bit. I'm not taking anything here. You know, I think Fort Wayne would have been the closest for me to a play. And, you know, Fort Wayne's a team that has shown the ability to pull off upsets against good teams here in the last couple seasons. I'm not convinced they'd be able to do it here. I think South Dakota is partially favored, too, because they're better on defense than South Dakota State. You know, South Dakota is pretty easily number one in this conference when it comes to defensive efficiency. South Dakota State would be the more jump-shot-oriented team. I will say South Dakota State has by far the best player in this conference in Dom. So, you know, to me, this is a conference that's an interesting one, but it doesn't really have betting value here.
This is in Sioux Falls, where University of South Dakota is, but this is not their home venue, so it is sort of a neutral site. But, you know, obviously with with South Dakota State and South Dakota both expected to be in the championship game here, you know, those two fan bases should travel en masse to Sioux Falls. The one thing about Fort Wayne, they were plus 1,400 when I looked earlier when I posted my preview over at bangthebook.com. Now they're plus 1,600, and that almost lines up with where the money line rollover should be, because they'll be a favorite against North Dakota State, and they'll be a dog to both South Dakota and South Dakota State. So about 18-1 is about where I put the money line, or about 16-1 is where I put the money line rollover roughly. So if you do want to try a shot at Fort Wayne, I don't think the money line rollover is that much greater. But again, you have the chance to hedge if they win that semifinal game by just not betting the championship game. So you do have that. On the other hand, you don't have any hedging value in the championship game if you don't play the future. So, you know, kind of a cart or the horse type of thing, I guess, but still not a ton of value in the Summit. And I can tell you that there's really not a ton of value in the West Coast Conference either as we wrap up the show with this one. This one starts Saturday night, or Friday night, excuse me, in Las Vegas at Orleans Arena. Gonzaga, the favorite, minus 192. St. Mary's, the second favorite, plus 225. BYU at 13-1, and obviously they'll be the most intriguing of the other teams. San Francisco 50, San Diego 65-1. Any value in this conference, you think, Kyle?
You know, the one team I would have considered as a value play is San Diego, but San Diego has some question marks now with their head coach, had some off-the-court problems that I'm not sure if he's going to be coaching them in this tournament or not. I don't know if there's been an update on that, but To me, you want to stay away from Gonzaga. If you want to take a long shot, you try to go to the bottom of the bracket. Gonzaga has been playing so well here of late. Both Gonzaga and St. Mary's are clearly two best teams by a really wide margin this year. I think it's really hard to find value here. I'm sure that I will not bet this conference tournament as far as the future. Gonzaga certainly the most likely to win it. Minus 192, probably not a great price. This one at Orleans Arena, you know, nobody has a really good home court advantage or anything here. But and Orleans is played as a pretty neutral site, so it's not necessarily a really good one to play unders. To me, you know, there's just not much here. You know, the West Coast is so top-heavy that it's just difficult to find any value.
I'm going to take Gonzaga here in this one. I'm going to go ahead and lay that price of almost a $2 favorite. And there are a couple of reasons why. For one, I know St. Mary's won at Gonzaga earlier on in the year, but Gonzaga in that second game, Jock Landale had 5 field goal attempts. So Mark Few obviously made his game plan very, very clear, and I don't really know what the Gales can do to counteract that unless somebody else is going to score for them. And, you know, when it comes to crunch time in a tournament like this, you really don't want to go that route. I don't see where St. Mary's can really make the necessary adjustments here. Now, this is an interesting tournament in that 7, 8, 9, 10 play Friday. The quarterfinals are Saturday. Sunday is an off day. Semifinals are Monday. But also for Gonzaga here, they're going to play at 6 o'clock local time in the first semifinal on Monday. St. Mary's has to play at 8:30 local time if it starts on time on Monday, and then play at 6 o'clock local time on Tuesday. So they're going to have about four and a half hours less of turnaround time than Gonzaga. And also, you know, you should probably see a situation here where St. Mary's is playing BYU, and that's not going to be a gimme. Gonzaga, whoever they play, they'll be a significant favorite in the semifinals. St. Mary's will have to earn it, I think, in that second game there on Monday. Going to be tough to come back on such a short turnaround on Tuesday to play Gonzaga. So I'm going to lay the price with Gonzaga. I think minus 192 is less than the money line price would be in that game on Tuesday. The money line would probably be minus 250-ish, I would think, for that straight-up game on Tuesday. So I think there's a little bit of value in Gonzaga in that respect. So I'll take the Bulldogs here because I think they do win this conference tournament. And I think I'm getting a little bit of value relative to the money line in that standalone game on Tuesday.
Yeah, I can't argue with you. I think that was a good point, too, that Gonzaga has a favorable matchup there in the semifinal where St. Mary's would likely have to play a tough game. Even if they win that game, you have to assume that they had to play harder than Gonzaga did, which hurts them in the championship game, of course.
Yeah, so, well, we actually did it. We got through all 9 of them here, and I think we did so in pretty efficient fashion as well. I mean, I'm going to my 16th straight home opener, so I was able to get that done during the show as well. But I know that we've got a lot of conference tournaments that we'll be talking about next week on Monday. Our hope is to do one of those studio quality recordings Tuesday night. I'm going to hope to post that Tuesday night instead of waiting until Wednesday morning. If I have to post it Wednesday morning, I'll get it up very, very early for you so we can talk about the rest of the conference tournaments at that point. But we should be able to fit all the rest of them in next week with 2 more segments with Kyle Hunter of huntersportspicks.com. Kyle, what's going on over at the website right now?
A busy time of the year. Sign up for the free picks newsletter if you haven't already. 66 and 33, I believe it is, the last 99 free plays, maybe 66 and 34 in the last 100. Regardless, it's been a good run here on the last 100 or so free plays here. They go out by newsletter. Also, I'll have my March Madness early access package here coming out later today, and that'll be sent out to the newsletter subscribers. So if you're interested in my premium plays as well, that's a good way to sign up to look to get the special offer there.
Well, that's Kyle Hunter. You can follow him on Twitter at KyleHunterPicks and HunterSportsPicks.com. Kyle, appreciate your time. Thank you so much, man. I know we love doing these segments, but still, it's a time commitment for you to do 2 of these a week, and you know that I greatly appreciate it, and we'll talk to you again next week.
You're welcome. I'm glad to do it. I always have fun with these.
Great stuff there on today's show with Kyle Hunter from HunterSportsPicks.com. Coming up on our Thursday edition of Bang the Book Radio, we'll have a studio quality recording with Brad Powers. That will be it. It will be a little bit shorter of a show, probably in the 45-minute range, something like that. Since I'm doing that studio show and I want to make sure that I don't waste that broadcast, I've pushed Rolf Michaels back to Friday. So we'll chat with Rolf Michaels at WagerTalk.com on Friday. All college basketball with him. whatever time we have left on Friday's show, I'll talk a little bit of Major League Baseball or NHL or something like that. So, you know, I know that we've had a little bit of a different type of schedule here this week, but so much going on. We want to fit as much in as possible, then obviously take advantage of those studio quality recordings that we're doing as well for some plans that we've got coming up here in the fall. So thank you so much to everyone with their patience for listening through some of these longer shows here this week. And always to my guests, who are fantastic people, very, very smart minds, and they're great at this time of year. I know they're busy too, handicapping all these conference tournaments and the like. So I greatly appreciate them taking some time out of their day to join me and join us here on Bang Book Radio. That'll do it for me. Thank you so much for listening, everybody, and I will talk to you again tomorrow.